Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com. You're probably already there. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song with his wife, Sarah, that you just heard. He's going to sing his version of the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio, and Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. The website. There are many ways to support the show. The Amazon link is one. You can use an Amazon link from JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com to go to Amazon. You order like normal and it supports the show. There is a straight up donation button, PayPal or Venmo to this email address that is mine, Jackie at JackieCation.com, where you can just donate to the show if you like the show a lot. I think PayPal has figured out a way to do a monthly. If you want to go monthly, please do. Other ways to support the show if you want to is you can buy merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts, and all the shirts are union made here in America, so they run a little big. Union Bayside, so if you want to look up their size chart. And then the other merch is my stand-up merch. On JackieCation.com, you can watch me do stand-up, you can look at my schedule, and the stand-up merch, a couple of different t-shirts, couple of different enamel pins, and all of my CDs and my DVD. If you want to live stream my DVD, it's over there at comedyfilmnerds.com. They have a live streaming capability, or you can get a hard copy of the DVD on my website. Oh, there are premium episodes at Bandcamp. TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com has probably 10 episodes that were done live. They cost me a couple of bucks to make, so I charge you a couple of bucks. If you've run out of regular episodes, go over to TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com and get some more. Other than that, I say this, let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in the living room with Carmen Morales. Welcome to the program, Carmen Morales.
Thank you so much for having me. So many times I've been in your living room, but never with the purpose of being productive. So I like this. It's nice.
Right. You took care of Tiberius. You and Ty Ty. You were Ty.
We had a love affair.
You had a love affair that lasted probably 2 years.
We did.
Yeah.
Ending with him trying to mount me at one point.
Yeah. There was him biting your leg or shirt.
He was trying to bite my shirt right between my tits, to be honest with you. He was right right in between there. I was like, you got bad aim, dude.
Right. You just
snuggled? An inch to the left or the right, you would have been right dead on. But he was old. What are you going to do?
He was old. And then I sprayed him with water trying to get him off of you.
Which you just sprayed me with water. And it didn't do anything.
It did not do anything. I am so sorry.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. It was funny.
We're wearing these headphones, and I am having an iced coffee. So if you hear ice in the background, know in your heart that it's me drinking my goofy iced coffee.
It's nice.
Because I like these headphones because I don't have to sweat.
I feel like I'm at a gaming convention right now.
Oh, right. Because they're actually quite good for gaming.
Yeah,
because they're headphones with the mic on
them. We have our own professional Twitch channel.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's called The Dork Forest. Let's do it. Carmen Morales, by the way, is on the Twitter at TheFunnyCarmen, C-A-R-M-E-N.
That's me.
And you have a CarmenMorales.com.
Yep.
So
for all of your Carmen Morales needs.
There it is. Stand-up comic, Carmen Morales. Also a photographer. You took that the shot of me, the live shot that's on my the front of my website.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which I saw, and that was one of those things that brought a little joy to my heart. I was like, oh my God, because people always forget to give a photographer a
little credit.
I was like, oh man. And then I saw a publication where I had taken a picture of Dave Ross, and they'd used a picture that I took of him, and he.
Also?
Yeah. Also. Oh. And I was like, oh, look at that.
Look at that, people.
I got credits.
I got more
credits as a photographer than I do as a comedian. How great.
Well, maybe that'll get you a headline weekend. Because the thing, now, your dorkdom, we've been trying to figure this out for a
while. Because I don't like a lot of
years.
Things.
Well, you got a watch with a wolf on it. Where'd you get that?
I got that at the zoo when I was on the road, which brings us to what my dorkdom is.
Oh, there you go.
Is
grinding it out on the road.
Yeah.
As a feature and now as a headliner.
Yeah. As both. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was raised out there. I was raised by wolves. And by wolves, I mean divorced men.
Yes. Either
before, during, or after a divorce.
Yep. Before, when they're, you know, fraternizing, cheating on their wife. Yep. During, when she finds out. And then afterwards, when she was such a bitch. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. Because then it's all her fault for some reason. She took all their money. And but he's a road comic, so it's not that much. Don't worry about it. Just keep working, sir. So when did you start doing stand-up? On the road. So wait, how long did you do stand-up before you started hitting the road?
2 years.
2 years. Okay.
So I started pretty early on because I started in Orlando and it was a smaller scene, but there was still like a hierarchy. Like there mm-hmm. were open micers, there were hosts, features, headliners, all in the same scene. So I got to see a path, if you will. But the path led to the ether, being out on the road.
Right. Right. And because in Orlando, there's a couple of what are called A clubs, right? The clubs that
the best one,
the best clubs that get sort of bigger names.
The Improvs, the Funny Bones, the Heliums. The
is there any of that in what is there like that in Orlando? What are the A clubs?
Well, the A club, there's an Improv now, but okay. When I started, there was the old Orlando Improv, which was downtown, and it closed because it was owned by Lou Pearlman, the guy that owned like NSYNC and a bunch of other, like 98 Degrees, and he had his whole scandal came out. So he lost, because he owned like five or six bars in downtown Orlando.
Okay. And then he managed those bands?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then he got arrested and had to go to jail. So he like lost. I don't remember what
and
it was
And that guy
for.
Was interested in investing in stand-up comedy? I'm so shocked. So boy
a
bands.
Scam artist? What?
And some sort of banana head?
Yeah.
What was the scam? Was he stealing money? That's going to be my speculative
I think
nature.
So. I don't remember. I think he was doing a bunch of shady shit. I don't remember what it was exactly.
But they frowned upon it.
Yeah. And so he lost all of those businesses, and which was unfortunate at the time because it like started thriving again.
Right.
And then so then it was like a dead zone, that area. And okay. So the Improv closed. So then the only thing I had were like these B and C rooms. So right. Like I was raised in bad comedy.
Well, and that can hurt. That can hurt. I mean it builds a different muscle, right?
For sure.
And but
to the I'll first time when you do an A room, you're like
this isn't working?
Well, you're just laughing at me? I don't gotta insult
right.
you for 10
I also
minutes
don't
before?
Have to swear and shout at you and tell you to turn down the television.
My name isn't Charles Morales on a chalkboard outside of a seafood restaurant. What's happening right now? Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So 2 years you're in Orlando, the club
grinding
it out,
uh-huh.
and sort of doing open mics and learning comedy.
I started hosting for Bonkers and stuff
okay.
like that. For
Where's like, Bonkers?
Bonkers at that time was...
My knowledge, by the way, of Florida stand-up comedy, almost nil. Almost zero.
You just never want to go down there. Huh?
No, well, nobody's ever booked me there. I'm sure I am not above going anywhere. I'll go wherever
you want. It's one of my favorite things about you, Jackie.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go do stand-up comedy wherever. But I wasn't raised in you know, yeah. I started doing stand-up in Wisconsin because that's where I was born. Uh-huh. So you were born in Florida. And then
hence
what were you
where
doing?
I started doing stand-up
yes.
comedy.
Now, did
amazing
your,
how that works.
So you're, what are you, 19? 18 or 19, start doing stand-up?
I think I was like 21 and a half
okay.
when I started doing it because it was like most of the places you could do it were at bars and stuff like that. So
right. And so what this has never been asked before. What got you into stand-up comedy?
Did next you're going to ask me if it's hard to be a woman in stand-up. I can't wait. I was actually always a fan. Like,
okay, so you were always a fan of stand-up comedy.
Even from when
like,
I was a little kid. I
want to do this.
Yeah, when I was in first grade, we had to write a paper about who inspired us. And mm-hmm. some people wrote papers about their parents, you know, being an astronaut, a rock star. I wrote right. mine on Gallagher. And in hindsight...
well, it wasn't Bill
probably
Cosby.
Probably not. He was the other one. Like, it was right. Bill Cosby's himself... Gallagher, the one where he has a big couch at the end, that one, and then
God, I hate that fucking couch.
Yeah,
but I was much older when that came out.
Of course.
So,
and then the third one was Robin Williams, Live at the Roxy. Those were the three specials that I used to watch on loop,
okay.
like how kids watch Frozen over yeah. and over and over again.
Right, right. And so then there was a place to do stand up in Orlando, which is where you grew up.
Yeah.
And you had a day job.
And I didn't. I had several. I had two full-time jobs, a part-time job, and I was going to college full-time at the time when I started stand-up.
Okay. You were like, not full enough, not busy enough.
No, not enough. I need a thing.
I need something else to do. Well, what were you studying in college?
Photography.
Okay. All right.
And then it was really strange because at that time, I didn't know you could just do stand-up. I thought the comedy gods just plucked individuals and like, oh, this, I thought you just were brilliant.
Which is exactly the problem. Like, but yeah. That's why people will consistently ask, how do you do stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
Which is also why people say, well, how do you get to do the road?
Yeah.
And you get to do the road by literally doing the road.
Yeah.
By just taking little or no money, driving to some place that isn't your home.
Yeah.
And find where they do stand-up comedy and hoping. I mean, it does. Did it involve you going with someone first and meeting them and then they booking you afterwards?
My first time out was because, again, I knew I met all those headliners that did it. So I was like...
So they would bring you or?
No, I just did it all on my own. From the very beginning, I was very lone wolf about it. Like, they just told me about it.
There you go.
And then I would set everything. I would call and email and, hey, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this? And I would just be relentless.
Yep.
And then finally somebody will go, fine.
Fine.
And then
that in a nutshell is stand-up comedy. But that will lead you to road work because that's what it is. It's that persistence.
For sure.
That they're like, well, okay, so we'll drive an hour and a half. It'll be $35. And you're like, fine.
Yeah.
Do I do 30 minutes? And then you'll do that.
The other thing is when I was at my day job, my boss, because at the time I was like selling timeshare over the phone. That was one of my chops. And then I worked at a nonprofit organization. And then I also was working part time at my uncle's plumbing contracting company in the office, just helping my mom out.
Okay.
And then I had my boss pulled me in and she was like, what are you doing here? Like, why?
You
seem,
really?
Yeah, she was like, you seem too happy for a place like this. Like, you seem like you should be doing more. And then I was like, well, you know. And I was, she's like, what you always wanted to do? And I was like, well, I've always wanted to be a comic. But I mean, you can't just do that. And she's like, oh, yeah, you can. And I was like, what? And she's like, my next door neighbor's fiance is a comedian. And I was like, oh, is he famous? I'll probably know who he was. And then she said his name. And I was like, I have no idea who that is.
Right.
Hence the world of comedy being open up to me that there's all these people that aren't famous that right. do it for a living. So I emailed him. And this is the same time I emailed Judy Carter, the famous author of the Comedy Bible, because I own that book too.
And, right. Well, if you want to get into it, I mean that she is almost the face of learn to do stand-up comedy, right?
She kind
of
is the ultimate comedy class. And right. That's kind of what she sold me on is she was like, oh, come do my class and pay me this money.
Right.
And then I emailed the comic and he was like, oh, just go to open mics. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds cheaper.
That is much cheaper. But it was your boss who said,
yeah,
you should do stand-up or you should do the road.
I should do stand-up.
Okay.
So then I started. It took me like 6 months to about a year to get the balls to actually do it. And then I did it. And I did. It was like one of those classic situations where I made a deal with myself. If I get a laugh, I'll come back. And if I didn't, at least I tried. You know, mm-hmm. one mm-hmm. of those things. And I got a laugh. I didn't write anything. It was all riffed. The very first time I went on stage was completely contrived riffed material.
Interesting. So that is also an option. Mm-hmm. What year was this, if I might?
2006
ish.
Yeah.
Okay. There. That's fine. And so you didn't take class. You just went to open mic like a person uh-huh. and they gave you 3 minutes and you went up.
Five,
and so,
cause well, you know, smaller scene, way
oh, smaller
more time
scene.
To go
that's
around.
Right. Oh, yeah. That is nice. So by 2008 though, you're in with the people.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing that happened is like the headliners that I knew, I was like, I want to start doing it. I want to start doing it for money. And at that time, I had none of the jobs. I had dropped out of college.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is it.
This is it.
The second I got that rush of doing well on stage, I was like, I will never do anything else. And I was like, I'll be poor. I'll be poor for this.
Yeah.
And so then I contacted.
So you quit the day jobs, including the one with your mom?
Well, that one they fired me because I was just slacking off. I was up all night to hanging out with comedians and
right.
I was being a bad employee.
That's it.
Like comics do.
Right. No, 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 no. No pressure. Yeah. But so were you living with your parents?
Yes.
Okay, that'll help.
Yeah.
That'll get you a sandwich at least once a day.
Yeah.
And a place to sleep. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so that's what you're doing.
Right. But I was actually, oh no, that's not true. I wasn't living with my parents anymore. I was living with my aunt. So that's why I had all the jobs and stuff like that, because I had to pay rent.
Mm.
So I was on my own, because me and my dad used to fight too much. So I lived with my aunt. And then she hated living with anyone. So that was also a problem.
Right.
So I went to, I had just set up, like there was this chain of clubs called the Comedy Zone. I'm very certain you're familiar.
I am.
And I had set up
but
a couple
of Southern
other,
run, right? Mm-hmm. It's mostly a Southern run, right?
And I had set up a one, to do one gig. I was going to feature a one-nighter, and then they were going to come watch me. And then that was supposed to be me, my auditioning for working for them everywhere else.
Right.
And then I had a couple of other, like Carol Pennington stuff, like these other, some very small
one-nightery kind
yeah,
of booker people.
Almost D and C. F
right, right. Just pop-ups, really.
Yeah. It's any hotel lounge that had a banner, that those kind of comedy clubs, in quotes. So I had a couple of those things. So I just left Florida within a nine-hour drive to do 2 weeks of shows that I had set up, most of which
were unpaid.
Yeah. Well, they were all paid. They were all paid, but it wasn't very much.
Okay.
So at the time, I had like $200 in my name because I had just paid rent, and I was like, I need a place for when I come back.
Yeah.
So I had $200 to my name. I go and I go to the first show, the Comedy Zone gig. The booker's not there. I just do the show. I do well.
Yep.
And now I'm upset. This guy was supposed to come watch me. This was going to be my whole big break, you know?
Right,
at
right.
The time I was
well, and
it
was.
Right.
And but then, they're almost never there, unfortunately. Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that.
Right.
Oh,
how could
young,
you?
Naive me. I was
how
like,
could you
this
know?
Is it. They can't wait. They can't wait for me to perform for them. But I fortunately, I got very lucky and I was performing with a road veteran, Todd Yon. Do you know Todd Yon? Big Bomba Tom guy?
Guitar.
Does a guitar comic. Yep. He would so funny. He would carry a guitar and do like 35 minutes, never addressing it or using it. And then then he would do another 35 minutes with it. And he would make these people howl. He was so fun. I'd never seen anybody do that.
Right.
At that time.
Right. I found his stand-up to be I liked his jokes.
Yeah.
And I liked his guitar playing, but the guitar playing with the jokes were the least strong. Mm-hmm. Like I thought that his musical talent was excellent.
Right.
And his joke writing was good. But when he did like wacky songs with his guitar, that was the least strong, my least favorite part of his act.
Right.
Okay.
I did love the stand-up part more so as well. So I was lamenting to him about what happened and how I drove all this way and I don't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, I'm going to call and leave a message right now. So he called the club. He called the Comedy Zone.
Oh, my God.
And he left a message for them. And he was like, she completely crushed. There's no reason you shouldn't work her, blah, blah, blah. The manager of the club also did the same thing. But they both called and was like, hey, we understand you were supposed to be here tonight. You couldn't make it, whatever. We want to tell you.
That is so nice.
Yes.
Yes.
So it was like one of those things where, you know, you always hear now how, like,
the people are dirtbags.
Yeah, everybody's a dirtbag, but sometimes they're not.
A lot of times people aren't dirtbags.
A lot
and
of times
they're
not.
This was incredibly thoughtful and very, very nice of them to have made this effort. But that does sound like the Todd Yon that I remember. That guy was incredibly, he was very thoughtful in
he
many
was.
Ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's probably still alive. I don't need to talk to him, but he's died somehow.
He was actually playing in a funk band for a few years when he was kind of taking a break from comedy.
Yeah.
And the funk band was very good.
Oh, there you go.
So I called because the show was on Monday. So I called the club directly. I called the guy that was supposed to come watch me.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I did the thing and you weren't there. But it was good.
Yep.
And he was like, oh, and I heard from other people. And then he goes, I have these fallout dates then if you want. So now my 2 week run has turned into a 4 week run or four, like a month and a half. I was
oh, there you go.
A month and a half.
Now, what would you do because of these runs? They're usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There might be a Sunday there, but there's rarely a Monday, Tuesday. What would you do on those days?
Those days I would call. I took a lot of risks.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm non-threatening. People are inclined to put up a chick than just a random dude.
Right.
You know? So sometimes I would drive 1 or 2 hours away from where my next gig was to, you know, spend
get
the night.
Close.
Yeah. Like I had a friend who was stationed in Fayetteville, North Carolina. So a lot of times I would just go do my 2 days and then go down there and spend like 2 days. Because then I didn't have to pay to stay there.
Yeah.
And then I just had to cover food and gas.
Right.
So then I would do something like that. Or if somebody like had a, like if I met a comic and I was like, hey, do you know anybody up here? And then they would call their friend and be like, hey, my friend's coming through. She's cool. So it was all based on like vouching. Like it was all like all referral based.
Right.
All the places I stayed.
Just wandering, essentially just wandering around the South.
Yeah.
Initially, just you'd go do a gig and then you're like, where will I sleep tonight? The gig usually had it at
they
a place.
They usually give you a thing, but it was like, I have 2 days. So it was always like, I was constantly obsessing about logistics. Where
yeah.
I was at, where I was going to be, what's in between, do I know anybody in these parts?
And if I don't, does anyone I know anybody in those
right.
parts? That's fascinating. So you were, I mean, that's a new grind because I only knew men that did that, which is why your dorkdom is this grinding it out on the road. So was that, so now you're out for 4 weeks because the Comedy Zone gave you those fallout dates.
Yeah. So, and sometimes they were like on a Wednesday and then it would be a different place on Friday and Saturday. So I would just have to figure out a Thursday.
Right.
So it was all, and at the time, I mean, all I had was free time. I'm just sitting in a coffee shop.
Right.
In Raleigh, North Carolina. And
hoping that something funny will come
right.
to you.
Well, that, and also I would go to an open mic. I would be like, oh, that's a big city. I would go to an open mic. I'd do a set. People over, hey, you're funny. All right, am I funny enough for you to let me crash on your couch? Would you let me crash on your couch? I did that so many times.
Yeah.
There were so many times where I was like, this might be bad.
Right. Well, that's the thing. There's a thousand stories that end. And then I wasn't killed.
Yeah.
So, but...
More so than the ones where you are killed.
Right.
So I would just, I would play the odds, you know?
Right.
And I'm certain there are stories that I don't know that maybe a time I was sleeping and somebody was yanking it over my sleeping face and I don't know about it. But
are you a deep sleeper? Is that what I'm seeing?
Pretty deep.
You sleep
pretty deep.
You're a thorough sleeper. You're like, well, if you need to touch yourself while I sleep, well, thanks for the couch.
Yeah.
Ass, grass, or gas. And in this case, it's you yanking on your person.
And just don't touch me.
Right. That's so it was mostly dudes too because of open mic and
right.
the dude ratio.
Dudes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So dude ratio, you're just going home with random open mic guys and going, I get to crash on your couch, and they're like, yeah.
And most of them were cool.
And most of them were cool. A couple
yeah.
of them, you had to talk to them. Did you ever have to leave?
No. One time I did stay 1 day less because it was like a friend of a friend. It was one of those things. It was like my friend was a comic who worked the road. Because that was the other thing too, is I had my road guys that raised me.
Right.
They had their network of all the places they all crashed.
Right.
You know, so they know a ton of people that would put comics up.
Right.
You know, and people really like to support people chasing a dream. You know.
That's well, yeah, and it's all this pay it forward kind of thing, and
right.
and nobody gets it more than someone who knows that you need. You need a place to sleep because they needed a place to sleep. And they're like, no, I get that. Let's find you a place that isn't your car.
So my friend, who is a comic, had a friend that was like living in somewhere in Kentucky. And I needed 2 nights off. And I went and stayed one night. And the first night I was there, her husband or boyfriend, her dude, was
yeah.
in prison and was calling and like accusing me of like accusing her of us fucking. And I had just gotten there. I had just gotten on the couch. Hey, how's it going? And then he's like, are you fucking her? Is that why she's there? You trying? And I was like, whoa. He's like, I'll fucking stab that bitch. Like he was losing his mind.
Right. And he was getting out of jail the next day.
Soon-ish. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be wrapped up in this. Plus it was one of those houses where it stunk, you know. It was like one of those places that didn't smell good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like one of those places you'd stay where you leave everything in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was just like, well, then I can wash this.
Right. The person that you are.
Yeah.
And everything that you are in it.
Yeah.
It's, but it's such a, and then you'd get to the next gig and there'd be a motel or a hotel or something. And then you're like, oh, thank God. I can spread out a little bit. I can hose off. I can air out my car. Now, these are very logistics questions. Did you empty the car? Like, did you ever just pull everything out of the car, stick it in the hotel or motel room, just so that you could air out your car a little bit after a couple of months of...
That was the whole thing is after I went out for like a couple months, I would come back to Florida and then I would go out for like 3 months and then I would come back and then it got to the point where I was just gone all year and would come back just for the holidays.
To visit your family.
To visit my family.
So yeah.
I was gone 11 months out of the year, just out in the ether.
And this is like in 2008, right? This is...
Yeah, from 2008 till like 2013, 2014.
Wow. Okay.
I was just out there.
So for 6 years.
6 years, I lived on the road.
Wow.
No address, no nothing. I used to keep no bank account. I used to keep a lockbox full of cash underneath my spare tire in my Saturn SC2, my yellow Saturn SC2.
Wow. She no longer has that car.
Nope.
And now you have a bank account.
I have a bank account.
And there you go. Yeah. And because why no bank account? Because no address?
I would still get my mail sent to my parents' house.
Yeah.
So I would just pick it up once a year. And if anything important came, they would just call me and tell me.
Right. They just open it and read it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no bank account just because... I don't know. I hung out with like a lot of conspiracists. Again, raised by divorced men. You don't want to put it in a bank. You know,
it's just right. It's
things.
All skateboard guys.
Yeah,
it's all just guys, but with tinfoil hats because they're all 45, 50 years old. And they're, because all those tinfoil hat guys are out of their damn minds. Ooh, they're all tinfoil, my age.
Well, that's what they're all just like, in my case, they're all just a bunch of potheads that were like, and this was until, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, you know.
No, yeah, those guys where they're just, you're like, okay, no, I understand Drew Carey got a sitcom and you didn't. There has to be another reason why the world is against you.
Right.
And it isn't because of 9/11 was an inside job, you dum-dum.
Right.
And so, but those guys have been actually driving me nuts this week. I know at least three of them.
That's evolved into a place where it's like, it's just ridiculous. Like then it was just like, that could be plausible. I could believe that the government is...
Lying to you?
Absolutely. I could
No, that's almost a certainty.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean...
But now it's evolved to where, like, you have to question everything and the world is flat and, like, all this.
Yes.
It's unraveled. But that was the beginning. That was the...
Those were the early days.
Yeah.
The early days.
Where it was a fun rabbit hole to go down, you know? Whereas now it's like, oh, no, I'm not insane.
Oh, no. And but the thing is when I was doing the road, and I wasn't doing the road... Because you're talking about 50 weeks a year,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh. And in those times, I only ever paid for a hotel like 4 times in those 6 years. Like that's how kind people are.
Yes,
that people don't realize. People are so incredibly kind.
Yeah, people had your back. They were very supportive, and they would find you a place.
Plus, there were road dogs everywhere, and then so one road dog would say another road dog, "Hey, we got a little road pup out here. Could you put up the road pup?" And they'll go, "Yeah." And then so sometimes I would stay a week at some place, 9 days, like way too long as a house guest.
Right, that's because, a long time,
you know. But then as a road comic, they're like, "I get it," you know.
No, yeah.
Doesn't make sense for you to go back to Florida when you got to go to Minneapolis next week.
Right. So you're in the middle of Indiana, or wherever you are.
So I'll go to Dayton, Ohio, and spend a week there, because that's where my buddy lived.
Right. Okay. So you're spending, you know, 2 or 3 days in towns where you don't have stand up and there's no open mics. What are you doing? Are you getting to know the towns? Are you getting to know the people? Are you just sleeping it out? What's happening?
I'm an extrovert. So,
right.
Most of them did have open mics. There wasn't very many places that didn't have them or that wasn't short enough. Because again, if I'm driving around the country for almost an entire year, driving an hour to a mic isn't going to be a big deal. So
right.
I could do that.
So in your rural Ohio, you're like, well, I'll drive to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Because there's an open mic on a Wednesday, but there isn't one in Dayton.
Uh-huh.
Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
But in Dayton, there was one. So that's what I'm saying.
But not every night.
No, not every night.
Yeah. But if you needed to, you would drive the hour 15 each way.
Yeah.
Just to pick up a set and then get back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's way more fun. Plus, I love an antique store. I love looking at old shit.
Okay.
So, and all of the places everywhere have old shit. So that was
right. People are trying to get rid of their crap everywhere.
Yeah, and so that was my church. A lot of times, like if I would get bored, love a coffee shop.
Right.
Loved a sandwich shop. Mm-hmm. Love an antique store, and almost every single place in the country has those three things.
Right. Right. So you'd sit around.
Mm-hmm. I'd sit around and think. I'd sit around and look at stuff. And then I'd sit around and write.
Yeah, yeah.
Or go up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then go do sets around, one of the reasons I wanted to have you because I usually don't do a lot of stand up shows, right? Shows right. about your dorkdom being stand up comedy, is that there is not a gig that I have done in this country that people don't know you.
Well, that was why it ended up working out well for me, because then I lived on the road for so long. I was such a rogue human, you know, like I didn't have a lot of, like my social skills were very specific to how you interact with other comics,
yeah.
Which is a very skewed way of how you interact with people.
Right. Right. That doesn't help you with the regular walking and talking to people.
Yeah. That and also my relationship with women was weird because I never saw them, you know,
right.
It would be like one woman per scene. Cause this is before that, like the last 5 years, there's been a big boom in women doing stand up, which is wonderful. But when you were out in the ether, they would never book you with another female.
Right.
I worked with one female headliner maybe in that 6 years
of living out there.
Yeah. And so I never see them except when I was in like a scene. And then they were always babies. And,
right.
And they were like, oh, wow, how do you, aren't you scared? And I was like, no, everybody's been so nice, you know?
Right. So far, so good. Everyone's been great. And it is interesting that this is, this is 6 years ago, you know, the 15, you know, you're talking 2014, 2015, and it's only 2019. So you're hardcore on the road from 2006 to 2014. And there's no, it's just like it was with me from 1988 to 2004.
Exactly the same.
Well,
same, actually a little less pay. The money's shittier.
And I was going to say, and the money hasn't changed at all, but the inflation's gone up. So gas has raised. The prices of gas are up.
That was true. That was like one of the hardest years was when it was like $4 a gallon for gas. And this drive would still be 16 hours. They're still only giving you $300.
Yep.
You just had to make it work.
Right. You had to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories was a couple of comics coming from some triple run, and they were in Wyoming, and they had to drive back to Minneapolis. And it was back when, this is in the 90s, so the subway used to have these cards that they would clip them. And you'd get 9 pips, and then you're a half a sandwich for free. And so
they would go to the craft store and buy the thing that cuts the holes out.
Oh no, way. No! Oh,
I love a road scam. I used to do shit like that all the time because sometimes you just didn't have another option. You'd have to do shit like that.
Well, there wasn't any food.
Cup. Yeah, you'd have to bring a cup.
Into the gas station into the McDonald's.
Get a refill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, did you ever do a thing that this is what I always thought I would have done? Because I never, the way I worked the road was much safer, much less, you know, if there were dead nights in between, I would go home.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, I don't, there's no reason for me to stay out here. And I had a day job that was enormously flexible, so I was allowed to come and go as I wished, to some extent. And but the fact that the Hampton Inns, the couple waffle places, the Best Westerns, they'll have like a free breakfast, and
that was another scam I would do.
Well,
on
that
the road,
was that
I would go to a hotel that I wasn't staying at and get their free condiment
and get
breakfast.
The free breakfast because that'll save you $15-$20 for the day.
That's how I used to go swimming a lot of times. Is I would go to a town and I'd be like, I want to go swimming.
Right.
So then I would just go and act like I was staying at the hotel. I mean, I think I got stopped once.
Yep.
But a lot of times those people don't give a shit.
No, everyone's making $8 an hour and they can't possibly care.
Yeah.
It's like going to see more than one movie.
Yeah.
And did you see a lot of movies?
I did.
There must have been a year or two where you were just like, I guess I'm the movie comic now.
I actually didn't. That wasn't like one of the things I used to do all the time.
Because I knew that that's what I ended up doing. I ended up hanging out with, on the road, just hanging out with the comics. We're like, well, we're going to see a movie. And we're going to stay and watch another one.
That was the only time I would ever go. Yeah, that was the only time I would ever go, is if I was with comics that wanted to go see a movie. Mm-hmm. Panette, anytime I would work with Panette, he would always like to want to go see a movie. And, but yeah, I always like to have my own
more
thoughts.
Coffees and
yeah,
just chill out.
Yeah, have a nice tea and
just write.
Yeah. And just look at stuff I wouldn't buy. It was fun.
Right. Well, you know, the old joke, if you're featuring, is went to the mall today to watch the headliner spend some money.
And, I have done that too.
You just kind of wander around behind them.
Yeah.
Hoping that they will probably buy you lunch. And they will.
A lot of them do. It's the whole, that's another example of the whole passing it down. Like the headliner usually buys the feature a meal.
Yeah, at least one meal a week. So just to be... You know, and it's
decent.
They know that the feature is making literally three times less than they are.
Yeah.
And it's grim. So,
and that's the other thing too. That's always so, everybody always talks about how unhealthy you are on the road.
Yeah.
Right?
And eating then, and
yeah. Cause oh, it's, you know, eat so much through a drive through and all that stuff. And then,
right. And comedy club food.
Yeah. It's all bar food. It's all fried. And so then there was like, there was about an entire year where I just brought my juicer on the road, where I started juicing. And so I would just carry a cooler full of produce, my juicer, and I would lie to hotels and tell them that I was diabetic and needed to have a fridge in my room if they didn't have a fridge.
Right.
And then I would just juice. I used to juice on the road. There's so many comics that I was like, you want to make juice? You want to make juice? And they're like, we haven't had a vegetable in 6 months. And I was like, well, I put a little piece of pineapple. It'd be nice.
There was Renee Hicks one time. I was featured for Renee Hicks back in the 12th century. And the show ends. Or right before the show starts, I think, second show on a Friday. And I was like, so you want to go drinking after this? And she goes, no, here's what I do every day. I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I work out. And then I do my admin stuff where I have to call people and do the work of getting more work.
Right.
And then I go and I work out again. And then I go and I get lunch, and she worked out like twice a day.
That sounds
on
horrible.
The road. Right. No, it's
See,
nothing I would
I
ever.
I juiced so I didn't have to work out.
Right. Well, I didn't, but I always thought, well, what an interesting, and she's like, and I don't drink and I don't do a lot. I don't do, what I do is I work during the day. I write and I do my admin stuff and I work out. And I was like, well, you're very fit. And she was working. I don't know what she's doing now, but she's probably still working, I assume. Mm-hmm. But it was one of the only times I featured for another woman. It was amazing in Milwaukee, probably 1997 or 98.
Yeah.
And, haven't seen her since. She shaved her head. That's the last I heard of her. Anyway, but she was super nice. But it was one of those ones where, you know, because there's always this thing where I used to have this rule. I was like, well, I could eat whatever I want on a travel day. And then it got too many travel days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're traveling every 2 days, what does that mean? You're eating good one day?
Yeah.
That's not good. You have to figure out how to be relatively healthy.
Yeah.
So you would bring a cooler. So,
yeah, I would. It was no more drive through stuff. If I wanted to eat anything, I had to go into a place and eat like a person.
Okay.
And that was the other thing, the road is I became comfortable eating alone, going to the movies alone, doing stuff alone, being comfortable with myself.
Like, yep.
That was, it was a, me living on the road was my eat, pray, love. You know
okay.
what I mean? It was my coming of age.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And was it, was there a...
Except it was drink, smoke, comedy. That
right,
was my
drink,
eat, pray,
smoke,
love.
Comedy. And what there was, okay, so there's two things. There's the cooler where you bring like a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter.
Except mine was all produce, yes.
Yes. Did you ever do it where when you didn't have the juicer... And you just, because if you're on the road a lot, you should, like, Maria always buys a quarter gallon of milk and some cereal so that she can have it in her room at all times.
Okay.
Just in case she gets hungry and there's, like, the closed, there's no restaurants or you'd have to walk or whatever. So, you ever do that?
I used to do protein, like, you know, snacks, like Lunchables type shit, except mine would always be like just like salami and cheese.
Okay.
Snacks like that. Yeah.
Okay. So that kind of stuff for the, and the long drives in between.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you got to.
Marijuana and music. That was.
Marijuana and music?
Marijuana and music. I could make a 16-hour drive feel like it's 8 or 32, depending on the music and the marijuana.
Wow.
I used to call it time traveling.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like just go cruise control and never ever stop. So how long could you drive before you had to stop? It used to be a thing
camel.
Like you tried to last as long because you were, to some extent, you're bored and you're like, well, I need
to
get
the marijuana. That's what the marijuana was for. I remember I used to work.
I did books on tape and I also did movies on tape.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I see. I wish I could do that. I wish I could listen to people talk for that long. I can't.
But instead, just Stoney Magoo driving across the country.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen to Dark Side of the Moon, like a real 45-year-old divorce guy. I was very influenced.
Or a 13-year-old who has never discovered any other music. Oh, my God. Are they even making new stoner music, to your knowledge?
I mean, sure.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, there's all different kinds of genres of stoner music now, just because now stoners are just regular people. You know, the more legal it becomes, the less the stoner thing is a thing.
A vibe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, now there's like doctors that smoke pot.
You know? I'm unfamiliar with their work.
I mean, they just give people cards so they can smoke pot too, but they're technically doctors.
Oh, right, right. Oh, there you go. But
there's like jam band music. I mean, I used to love listening to instrumentals. I still do. I still love, I love a little pot and a little sativa, a little instrumental music, because then my mind gets to wander,
mm-hmm.
and then I can go down a rabbit hole and figure out where a bit is.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So you'll write on marijuana.
Yeah.
On marijuana.
On the wacky tobacco. Yes.
Here's
Jackie.
My thing about the wacky tobacco. You genuinely have 7 to 9 minutes to talk to me before I would fall asleep. So I never smoked pot, and I would just wake up under a pile of coats at the party, and everyone would be very disappointed that I had weeded off. And so I never smoked pot. And I would get sleepy and driving. Mm-hmm. No, that's not going to happen.
Right.
So but the thing is 2006, that's kind of the start of the heyday. Like the best minds of my generation mm-hmm. have been working on the different strains of pot for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I don't want to get hungry. I don't need the munchies. I just want my mind to be expanded.
Yeah.
Or I just want to calm down, less anxious. So there's like 35 different strains. I had Ungayo Belum on the show and his dorkdom was pot.
Nice.
He's a Sacramento comic.
Uh-huh.
And, so what were some of your favorite favorite runs or favorite towns or favorite weird, like, one-nighter, like, grinding it out for 6 years has got to have a couple of places where you felt more at home than others.
Absolutely. I actually loved your neck of the woods. I loved being up in the Midwest. I loved Minneapolis is one of my favorites. That was one of those ones where I would figure out a way to spend more than 1 week there.
Okay.
Just because I love the scene. I could get up every night. Everybody was super nice. They were super welcoming.
Right.
Always had a place to crash. Like that was one of the places where it was like my friend Kendra would also work the road, and she knew a guy that she did like a festival with or something that lived there. And then I didn't. The only thing I knew about the guy is we had the same birthday. That was his name was Dan Mogul. And so I showed up at his house at like 1 o'clock in the morning to spend the night there.
Yeah.
And we're still like the best of friends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're like the best of friends. And it was one of those things where it was a chance meeting and, you know, he was so welcoming and just made me, these are some of the spots I go to. Hey, could you get this girl on the show? Blah, blah, blah. One of those things. And so I loved Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Loved it so much.
Did you ever do Milwaukee or Michigan or any of that?
Like, oh, yeah.
Or did you go... Because the thing is, so I started in Wisconsin, and so I would do some of that Wisconsin stuff, worked out of Minneapolis, and would go over to the UP and then down into Michigan. Didn't do Chicago a lot, but you lived in Chicago, sort of.
Well, I had a, again, it was like a rogue comic. I didn't have any financial responsibility except my car insurance and my phone. That was the only thing I had because I quit college
right
before they were trying to give me a bill. You know, I, when my scholarship dropped, like ended, then I ended. I was like, well, that's it. I'm not doing
so no
anymore.
Student loans.
No student loans.
Well, that's, that is a, that was, I had a student loans forever. Mm-mm. And one time,
I'm not going to pay full price for an art degree. I'm not an idiot.
Well, I had defaulted. I had not defaulted on my student loans, but I hadn't paid them in many months. And I went to do Cap City in
they
Austin.
They garnished your wages?
No. It was back when Cap City gave you a car. You had a condo and a car. And
oh, that's nice.
Right. So you'd land, you'd take a cab to the club, and the club would hand you the keys to the car. And then you drive to the condo. And it was a great way to drink and drive. It was an amazing way to go get your own drugs.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible idea. I think it lasted probably 5 or 6 years. But
amazing that it lasted that long.
It was, yeah. There was another one in Tulsa that had another thing that would give you a car. It was, they were owned by the same people initially. Mm-hmm. And the La Quinta people. The people that owned the La Quinta chain of hotels. And so I show up, I get the keys to the car, and while I'm getting a free soda, there's a phone call, and the manager comes out and he goes, "Hey, student loan are on the phone for you." And I was
Sally?
Like,
"There's a Sally?
There's
the
a Sally Mae? There's
Sally
like
Mae on the phone for you?
There's like the Pell Grant people?" But it was the woman, the people who had my student loans. And I was like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, I could tell her you're not here. I mean, it's 11 o'clock in the morning." And I said, no, this sort of sleuthing deserves to be talked to.
Yeah.
This woman deserves, and she had called me any number of times over the last 2 years that I had lived here. And so I was on the road, and I would answer, and I would always say that I wasn't me. And she's like, "Really? Your voice sounds so familiar." And so I get on the phone at Cap City, and I was like, her name was like Angela or Mary Beth or something. And I was like, "Is this you, Mary Beth?" And she goes, "Hi, how's it going, Jackie? This is Mary Beth with," and I was like, no, yeah. How did you find me? And she was like, "Well, they have a calendar listed through your website and where you're doing stand-up comedy." And I said, "You should work for the CIA, the FBI. And I was like, "So," and she was like, "Well, you know, we need to set up a payment plan." And I said, "You know, I keep offering you the same amount of money that I can afford, and you won't take it." And she's like, and I regret actually not just sending that amount of money over the years, because for 2 years I didn't pay, because I offered them $100 a month. I said, "I can pay you $100 a month forever on this bill if you want." She was like, "How about 140? And I said, no, I didn't arbitrarily come up with the number 100.
That's my budget. That's what I have to offer.
Yes. And then finally, she, long story short, but she loses the, I mean, she gives up the account somehow. Some guy calls me and he's like, "What can you do?" And I said, $100 a month. He's like, "Fine." And then I spent 5 years paying it off. So, and then a lump sum when I got a big gig. Anyway,
yeah.
So it's over. But the crazy thing is when people can find you on the road.
Yeah.
And
that happened to a buddy of mine. He owed money to the IRS, classic road comic thing. You don't pay your taxes for 5 years. And then he's doing a gig in Vegas, and he gets, of a $2,000 check he's supposed to get, he gets like $150 because they garnished his wages. They took everything that he owed.
I think when Doug Stanhope got the Man show, they took all of the money because he hadn't paid taxes in like a dozen years or something. They were like, "Oh, you got a $50,000 check? Yeah, you're not getting any."
That was my line where they were like, "Oh, I'm not, you know, fine with fuck the government, but I'm paying my taxes."
Right.
Paying my taxes.
When you
nobody's
meet these,
coming after me.
Right. You meet these road dogs on the road and they're all conspiracy theories and also blowing off their child support and their taxes and their.
It's like, are you a
things.
Road comic or are you on the run?
They were on the run.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they were doing. Hoping to get some stand-up. Hoping to get some stage time, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I love that. So, by the way, I am talking with Carmen Morales, and we are discussing Grinding It Out on the Road, which you did for 6 years on Fire. Now, you have lived here in Los Angeles for how many years?
I've lived out here for, like, I think 2.5 years now.
Yep.
And then before that, I lived in Chicago for 2 years because I didn't have any financial responsibility. So I was like, if I'm going to move to New York or LA, which was the move for everyone, I needed a place before that so I could, you know, see. Because again, it was very hand to mouth.
Yep.
For 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no real idea. I mean, according to the IRS, I wasn't making any money, you know? So I was like, well,
and quite honestly,
kind of
you were not.
I wasn't.
If you was hand to mouth.
It really was.
Right.
Yeah. Especially when my bank account is a lockbox under my trunk.
Yes.
Like, there's obviously not that much money in there.
Yeah.
So I would, like, I moved to Chicago. So I got
Which
a place.
Is a great hub.
Great hub, because I could, within 6 hours, I could do like 40 weeks.
Yep.
So it was easy. And then I was being in a scene, you know?
Yep.
Trying to navigate a scene. And, so I would go to Chicago and I'd spend my rent there was like $500 a month. So I was like, all right, I know I can afford $500 a month. That's
right.
Something.
Yeah.
And then that generated like, okay, well, I need to make X amount of money. So that, you know, it was just training me to be an adult about things.
Right.
Instead of me being on the run, even though I'm not running away from child support
or anything.
Wife. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, eventually you have to learn how to sort of organize your cash and your life so that you're not living out of your car.
For sure.
So you're living in Chicago, and Chicago is a great place to go and do stand-up. How did you end up breaking into sort of the bigger clubs? Because you were doing the scene. So did you work your way up through the club's MC feature kind of situation, and then you would meet the headliners and this type of thing? Because I know now you're headlining like sort of B&C rooms everywhere.
Yeah.
And you have the chops to do these rooms, obviously.
Yeah, I just don't have the credits. I'm not like a draw or whatever. So.
Which is a lie that they tell you because no one's a draw.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's 11 comics who can fill the room and a draw.
And if once they can fill the room, they can fill a theater.
Right. And then they are out of your comedy.
Yeah.
So essentially, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But they would like the credits just as a, which is why you'll see some headliners with credits that are 30 years old, but they're Comedy Central, you know? And, You might as well just say
well,
Comedy Central, because who's gonna call you on it?
That was, and that I think was, it was a detriment to themselves, Comedy Clubs going that way, because it used to just be you were selling the idea of stand-up comedy. And
right.
Then people were like, oh, that's not a movie. That's something different. And
yep.
Chicks love going on dates when it's something different. You know what I mean? So you bring your lady out to a comedy club because they love something different.
You're hanging out with too many men because chicks love something is the pitch of a guy who has a club in Boca Raton. So is there a club in Boca Raton?
Yeah, there
is. Why wouldn't there be? Because
It used to be called Boca Nuts, and then it was... There was the Boca Nuts Comedy Club, and then there was just a Coconuts... you know, they were more serious. And then then there was a New York comedy club in Boca Raton, owned by this very crazy woman from New York called Stephanie.
Well, I'm glad she made the effort to come out of New York, go down to Boca Raton, and open a comedy club called the New York Comedy Club.
Yeah.
It's just such a lot of work to do. What is she thinking?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, now she's not thinking about it at all, because that one inevitably closed, just like the other three.
Right. Everything. It's there are clubs. There's towns that I want to go to sort of reframe what I think about that city. Because
sure.
I had such horrible shows there, or the club was so terrible, or I had to hit somebody on the nose with a newspaper, right? And my town is Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's a terrible, terrible town, and I'm sure it's not.
Yeah,
I'm sure
right.
It's a lovely city full of, because the audiences weren't bad, but the club itself, they charged $7, which was less than a movie.
Yeah.
To come and see stand-up comedy. There was a comedy condo, and the iron was chained to the wall. and I don't know who's stealing a $12 iron, but stop booking them. And instead of making the rest of us have to stand really close to the wall if we wanted to iron something.
Speaking of a comedy club, a condo iron, I used to work with a guy who would always make grilled cheese sandwiches on those irons.
Instead of the stove?
There was, because a lot of hotel rooms don't have stoves.
Oh, right, right. Oh, so
he would, in a hotel room, he would take an iron and he would take two pieces of bread, put cheese in the middle of it, smear butter on the outside of it, and then just hit an iron to it. And that he would make a grilled cheese in it, which is great for you at that moment. But boy, does it fuck everybody's dress shirt up that comes to that hotel room afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. You just broke the iron.
Yeah.
Yeah, what that, see, it's that sort of, that sort of,
like, I love like being crafty, but just eat the fucking cheese sandwich. You gotta
just
have
eat
a cheese
sandwich. You don't have to have a grilled cheese. Just have a cheese sandwich.
Yeah. Just have a cheese sandwich.
It's, the Jackie and Laurie show would make hay with this particular topic. Yeah. We don't have to. But because we're mostly talking about like the decent, you know, people that you meet. Not the guy who's willing to break an iron in every hotel room he ever goes into.
Absolutely.
Because here's the other thing. Bring a Foreman grill. They're not that big.
No, they're not big. And they're not that expensive either.
You could even bring an iron.
Or a hot plate.
Or, yeah, your own hot plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Hot plate in a pan.
Yeah, tiny
pan. What's that, $25?
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on. Everyone has $25.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Just buy $25 less of marijuana or whatever other drug you were going to do that weekend,
right,
sir.
Right. And then what made you need that grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Whatever drug you're doing for that, just a little bit less and keep plugging along. Yeah.
So that was the other thing, too, is like I learned so much from the mistakes that like a lot of those road guys would make. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you can witness some really good lessons.
Yeah.
And, you know, some lessons you have to learn yourself, or
Absolutely.
You do different things that you're like, what have I done? And, like, two episodes ago was the Augie Smith episode. Mm-hmm. And so there was some more reminiscing about this very topic to some extent, except for that he would tell stories of dead comics, like his favorite stories of the bad activity that bad choices.
I have one of those.
Oh, you
it's
wanna...
actually about the late John Panette.
There you go.
John Panette tried to force me to do cocaine in order for me to go back on stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's you know, that's a guy with a disposable income. Because cocaine is very expensive, if I remember correctly.
Well, it was weird because he was in a particular part in his career where he was trying to be sober, but then he would do these shows and people would just show. There was a woman that showed up that weekend with morphine fucking lollipops, and like people were just giving him drugs and giving him booze. Yeah, it was insane to me.
Right. Do you know that in Boise over the weekend, a woman brought me a book? It was really, really great. I can't always take all the books.
Yeah.
And she had two other books. And I was like, I'm not going to take those.
I'm going to take this one.
I like this one.
I'm going to read.
This is the one I'll read. Those two, I'm not going to throw those out for you.
Yeah.
just take those to the library.
Exactly.
But that's what I want. I want someone to, you know, people bringing people drugs. Stop it.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
Unless you ask for it. Like, I get it. Like,
I guess if
Benson,
you ask for it.
Yeah, Doug Benson, he will always smoke your pot. Yeah, smoke the weed. And I like that. But when, I mean, I was just like, this guy's trying to get, like, he was, after that weekend, he was going into a rehab center.
Wow.
Yeah. He was going into a rehab center, like, the Monday after the gigs.
Right.
So this weekend, some dude, I think it was like some dude he went to high school with or something, and I get it. Panette was, you know, he was an 1980s guy, so he was all about cocaine, and gluttony in all shapes and forms.
Right, right. He was a big guy and then lost a lot of weight, right? Because didn't he get the surgery?
Yeah, he got the surgery.
Okay.
So we were there, and
can you still? I know you can't eat sandwiches after the surgery. Can you still do drugs after the surgery?
Well, he did. So
yeah.
I guess so. And so I was there and I was hosting, and it was such a big deal to me to be working with Panette, you know, and because I think at the time he was the biggest comic, literally and figuratively, that I'd ever worked with.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he was a big deal.
He was a big deal and a big guy.
And a big guy.
Big guy, big deal. And I was featuring for him, and like I remember one night, like he he got was going to fire me because I accidentally spilled a shot of tequila. Like he was he would just sip Patron like it was like a ice water.
Oh my gosh. Just
in the room, and he had these like highfalutin like banker type peoples that it came when we're hanging out, and at the time
like his entourage.
No, but just people like, I guess friends. I don't know if they were friends of his or just fans that happened to be really rich that loved him. And they were in the green room hanging out with him. And I think at one point I went to grab something for him because I was also, being a feature, you always take care of everybody.
Right.
I can't tell you how many Brad breaks and insert other names of drunken messes I had to fucking take care of.
What's that?
There are just so many.
Brad break? What's that?
Brad break was a headliner that... The weekend I worked with him in Milwaukee, we were doing a comedy club that was in the basement of a strip club.
Okay.
And he also was apparently sober. And then until that weekend, he decided to not be sober anymore and just drank a ton. And then he didn't have a car. He didn't have money. He didn't have any money. So he couldn't buy himself food. So the feature who's making half as much money as him is now
you.
Yeah, which is me because I'm not an asshole.
Right, you're trying to keep someone alive.
Off. Yeah, and that was the other thing I would do, which I admired about you when you moved here, is you always do comics brunch. And I used to do that. I would create my own friendship when I was on the road. I would hit up every comic I knew and tell them to bring whoever they wanted to.
Yep.
We're all going to meet here. And that one particular weekend, I had friends working at Pottawatomie. I had friends working at Joker's. I had friends working at the Comedy Cafe. So I had a bunch of people in town. So we all met at a Whole Foods to eat at the cafeteria.
Right.
And then Brad breaks there, like basically trying to panhandle from all the other comics. And I was just like, just fucking, I'll buy you the plate. Just stop being weird. You're creeping everybody out. And there was a few of those times where I was just like, Jesus, how am I half your age and have my shit together better than you do?
Right. And here's the thing about the Dork Forest is that you can love and also sometimes it'll drive you nuts. The fandom that you have led yourself into will sometimes drive you bananas. So
anyways, the Pinette story. So he was like, should I fire her? Because I had spilled his tequila on his pant leg whatever. So he was going to fire me. So I was just really weird. I was weirded out and kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night was his buddy from high school came and I guess gave him some cocaine, like gave him a bag of cocaine.
Right.
So he was doing coke in the green room, which I don't mind. You do whatever you want. It's not my job, you know? Yeah. And so we, then it's like in between, like second show's about to start, and he goes, he do some with me. And I was like, nah, it's like my uncle's a cokehead. It kind of ruined it for me. I don't really want to do it. And he goes, you can fucking do some with me or you're not going out on that stage. And I was like, oh, come on, John. I don't want to fucking do, I kind
of
want to do cocaine.
It's like something out of a bad movie.
I know.
It's like why are you such a hack off stage? What's happening? I don't want to do your weird drugs. Yeah.
So then he has some on his finger and he shoves it up my nostril before I go on stage. And I breathe out instead of in. Mm-hmm. So it's just my nostril gets numb, but I don't get high.
Right.
So I go on stage, do my job. And then I come back and the guy's telling him, he's like, oh, I got more coke at my bar. I run a bar and right down the street. Do you want to come? And then John's like, will you drive me? And I was like, sure, I'll take you. How could this go wrong? So I drive him, and anytime anybody says, come to my place, it's just down the street, it's never just down
the
street.
It's never down the street.
It was like 45 fucking minutes away. We were in Miami. It was like up in Fort Lauderdale. It was far away.
Yeah, that's too far.
So we're there, and it's in this like dive bar, and so it's me and him sitting at the bar, and we're just having a chat, and then his buddy's like, oh, you guys want a sandwich? I'll make you a Philly. I guess the guy was from Philly.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll make you a Philly. So he makes us a sandwich, and Panette's just like, where's the fucking cocaine you promised me? That's why I'm here. I'm not here for a Philly sandwich. I'm here for the drugs you said you had. And we get there, and we find out there's no more drugs. Well, guess who's upset about it? Mr. Panette is very upset about it.
Is he upset because they've run out of drugs?
He's upset there's not drugs, and he was promised drugs.
That'll happen. People love drugs.
Yeah, especially when they're doing those kinds, the real addictive kind. And so then another guy comes over and he starts chatting John up, but he doesn't want to hear it. He's like, I'm going to eat this stupid sandwich and I'm leaving. And then this guy just starts getting, at least, so it starts getting heated and like bubbling up. And then Panette goes, get the car. And I was like, all right. So I get at the time I was driving a Kia Sportage. So I get in the car, pull it up to the door, and the door swings open. And I just see Panette swing on the guy. And he swings on the guy. And he punches the guy in the face.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
He walks out. And he was like, will you drive me to the hotel? And I was like, yeah. So I drive him to the hotel. And he was like, it was not a bad Philly. It was a pretty good Philly. I was like, it was a good Philly. You're right. And so I get there. And he's like, do you want to crash here? And I was like, no.
No.
I'm going to go into my shittier hotel.
And enjoy myself alone.
Enjoy my silence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's
there
the thing.
There are times when it's bad.
There is times.
Yes.
But here's
but
the thing.
Good times outweighed the bad for sure. Plus, right. That story's hilarious.
And you get to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
In the end, you get to do stand-up comedy, and people always think it's much, much worse than that.
Yeah.
So you're like, no, you're just hanging out with a mess.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Worst case scenario, everyone's murdered and raped, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the worst case scenario is you're just hanging out with someone who threw up in the bushes.
Yeah.
Where you're like, it's fine. No, here's a towel.
Yeah.
And it'll, you know... And you keep going.
Water? Here's
you
water,
keep
buddy.
Going. It's yeah, it's okay. Carmen Morales, it has been an hour. We have talked. And so it's been a weird rabbit hole of stand-up comedy. We don't get to do enough of these, but it is always fun to do these and to do all the different dorkdoms in all the world.
Yeah.
So everyone should go and see The Funny Carmen. It's carmenmorales.com. T-H-E-F-U-N-N-Y-C-A-R-M-E-N. And carmenmorales.com. Thank you for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?